a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Welcome back to another Cue It Up podcast. I am excited to be joined by the newest Team Europe Moscone Cup captain, Carl. How's it going?
Vice captain, steady on.
Oh, come on. We can call you a captain still, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm vice. Alex is captain. But, you know, he will have a plan in place. And, you know, obviously, I'll certainly respect that and follow his lead. But, of course, you know, he wants to hear what ideas and thoughts I've got. So maybe it's a little bit joint-ish, if that's a word.
Yeah, for sure. The first question naturally has to be, what are some of the roles that come with being a Vice Moscone Cup captain?
Well, I mean, like I said before, obviously Alex is going to have his little plan. The problem at the moment is it's kind of been a little bit of a slow start, hasn't it? Obviously, you know, we should be at the World Pool Masters right now, but obviously with this virus and everything's put on hold, so there's more important things going on. So it's kind of just hang fire a minute. And, you know, we've spoke a bit on the phone, and we were sort of, you know, he was going to be at the World Pool Masters, so was I. So that was when we was going to really settle down and, you know, put our plan together. But we actually spoke yesterday. He sent me a little message saying we need to catch up and sort of make plans now, because obviously we couldn't go to Gibraltar. So that's just kind of where we're at. Yeah, it's just a bit of a strange time at the moment.
Yeah, it is. And maybe that's exactly where the interview should have started, was what does the life of Carl look like these days?
A lot of books and colouring in with my two children. It's all chaotic, obviously. You know, there's no school here at the moment. And I wouldn't say I'm the best of school teachers, to be fair. I'm more just like kind of messing around in the garden and playing football, really. That's my teaching.
You don't teach good patterns to the kiddos?
No, I don't teach I don't teach English, maths, any of it. That's not my forte. But, you know, it's just at the end of the day, obviously, you know, I've got two young kids and I'm kind of not really bothered if, you know, some of the other parents at the school I've spoke to, they're like, yeah, we do maths at this time, we do English, but I just want them to smile and be happy, because obviously it's a mental time at the moment.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I saw this on Facebook, and anything that you see on Facebook is definitely, definitely true. Did I see that Boris Johnson got coronavirus?
Yeah, he's today they announced that on the news, saying he's got, they're saying it's a mild case or something. I don't really understand what's going on with it all, to be fair. It's mild. Or they're saying, obviously, England, if you're over 70, don't leave the house and all this. But yeah, it's just crazy, isn't it, right? Just something like that. You know, obviously, we've never really seen anything like this. So, you know, the main thing is you just got to stay home and do your bit. But I'm just kind of like, just getting all them little jobs done that I've never got around to doing. So my house is looking in pretty good shape at the moment.
Yeah, I can agree to that. I think on day two, I'd started polishing all the sparkles in my apartment, and you know, there's just nothing left. There's nothing left to polish up. Everything's so clean.
No, that's what I mean. I mean, I live in like sort of an oldish house, so we've had a lot of work done over the years to it, but it's one of them where, oh, yeah, I need to sand that down. I'd like to repaint that and do this. And I just, you know, you just never get around to it, do you? Because you just live in it. But now it's going to, like, it's going to be unbelievable when this virus has finished my house.
Yeah, and I mean, I would like to think that it's only going to be a day, you know, or two. And then I think, oh, well, wait, this might be 4 or 5 weeks. And then I realize how rosy that looks. This might be months. We might be looking at a lockdown for a long time, and that is so weird.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, we was on lockdown last Monday, but my girlfriend, she's a journalist for the BBC, so obviously she's writing stories and all this. But we kind of knew what was going on. We was following it already in China, so I actually took my children out of school a week before they even decided to shut the schools down, because I knew it was going to come on the school closed on the Friday. I knew it was going to come, so we just said, "Oh, we'll just take them out in the week." And so I've actually been on lockdown nearly 2 weeks now.
Well, that's crazy. This kind of naturally leads into the next question. Do you have a table at home? Are you still hitting balls? And the reason it kind of leads into the next question is, you still hit balls. I mean, you still play a little bit of pool, but you don't play anywhere close to where you were 5-6 years ago.
No, well, here's the thing. The thing is with me is, it's like, obviously, I sort of got into American pool kind of just by luck or fluke because of the IPT back in 2005, 2006. And then when that finished, I decided to give the nine ball a go because I'd been to America trying to qualify for the IPT, and I'd got a bit of a bug of that, but it was never sort of my true love. And because, like, where I live, you know, I've been with my girlfriend 15 years, we've got two kids, and somebody like Jason and Darren, back in the day, they made the decision to move to America, where I think if you live in America and you're playing American pool, it's probably the best thing you could do. Or even kind of like in places in Europe, so Germany, they have like Bundesliga. Is it Bundesliga? Or is that the football? Maybe I'm way off the mark. I don't even know. But they have like a league anyway in Germany where they play, you know, nine ball and things like that. But in England, everything's snooker. You know, American nine ball's not really big in England, so it's like probably one of the worst places to live. So I just felt every time I was traveling away and I was playing, I felt like I was leaving so much behind. And then when I come home, nine ball, even in the clubs, you know, we have a little, you know, like the bar box tables you guys have over there.
Yeah, you have the English pool tables, right?
Yeah, we have the English eight ball tables, and it's a completely different ball. It's a completely different cue. So if you're going to play that game, you can't really play nine ball. It's just so different.
No, it's so different.
It's like playing tennis and table tennis. You're just not going to play both to a higher standard. Yeah. So anyway, that's why I decided to play the nine ball. Obviously, Darren did, and Jason and Chris Mellin. We all come from the English eight ball. But nothing, you know, there's no real money in English eight ball. There's no tours, tournaments, nothing really big's ever gone on. So we left, but I just feel like every time I come back home, I've got like a games room at home, and I had a diamond table in there. And every time I was going in there and just trying to practice, I just hated every minute of it. I just couldn't do it. It was making me really depressed. And I always felt if I did live in America, I would be different, because when you go to the pool room in America and it's all American pool tables, you know, people are playing this one pocket and bank pool, and there's obviously all the leagues, and I'd probably enjoy it more there. But because I live here and I was trying to do it, I just, you know, it did send me really depressed. And I remember that the what I did is I went to the Derby City Classic in 2016, and me and Oscar Dominguez had arranged to play a challenge cash match, and I wanted to play race to 17. First to three sets, and I wanted it over 2 days because I never really practiced anyway because of what I've just said. It used to really get me down and depressed, and I was hoping just previous to that, I'd got to the US Open final and qualified for the Moscone Cup, and I'd played really good in the Moscone. So in the January, I thought, if I go to the Derby City Classic, I play Oscar, whether I win or lose, I didn't care, because I was just using it for like really intense practice with another good player, and hopefully kind of kickstart a season. And then I went there. I didn't really like the tournament because obviously I live in England. We don't play one pocket. We don't really play a nine ball. There's no bank pool. So I didn't really do anything, any of them. And then I just thought, I was supposed to go to China. It was probably around the April, and I was at the airport, and I was looking out the window in the airport, and it was raining, and I was stood there on my own going to China. And you know the very last bit where they take your boarding card and you go on the plane?
Yeah, yeah.
I was the last person, and I said to the woman, I said, "Oh, can you get me bag off the plane?" She looked at me like I was some kind of like psychopath, right? And she said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Oh, I just want my bag, I'm going." And they got my bag. The police escorted me out of the airport. I delayed the flight for 45 minutes, and I went home, and I never played again since.
Wow. Besides...
Because, well, I just feel like it's such a lonely thing to do. And the other thing is, I don't feel like there's many great tournaments to play in where it's actually worthwhile doing. I mean, obviously, things have slightly changed a little bit because, you know, when I was doing that, Matchroom Sport didn't have the US Open, and obviously they've just acquired the World Nine Ball Championships. So the only three kind of events where I felt like was really good anyway was the Moscone, the World Pool Masters, and the World Cup of Pool. Now, the World Pool Masters was a 16-man invitation, and the World Cup was a doubles event. So all the other singles events we used to play in, I just thought they were terrible, right?
Yeah, the International Open out of the U.S. is a pretty good event.
Yeah, but obviously that was the U.S. Open back then, you know, when I was playing. But obviously that's what I'm saying. So when I quit early 2016, and I got rid of my table at home. And then obviously, you know, the U.S. Open last year was Matchroom's first event. And then obviously last year they acquired the World Nine Ball Championships, which is in October this year. So obviously they've now got the five events, but it's still like nowhere near anything, is it? Do you know what I mean? Obviously Matchroom are unbelievable in not just in the pool, they do so many sports, and obviously I see a lot of it because I'm English, so I see the darts. You know, my cousin's a professional dart player. They play so many tournaments, so much live TV coverage and you know, it's just really good, big crowds, and that was the main reason why I stopped playing.
Yeah. I guess there's a lot of things along there that I wouldn't mind addressing. For anybody from anybody from the U.S., if you've actually never played black ball, English eight ball, are those the same? Those are the same game, right? Black ball and English eight ball.
Yeah. Some people call it. Well, there's a rule set called black ball rules, but basically it's an English eight ball table. It's the same size as what you guys play bar box on.
Yeah, my ignorance. But when I was in London last year for the Moscone Cup, I swung down to Spots and Stripes, and I can give a shout out to Claire Watts, who works there. And I played on those tables, and it's impossible to get side spin. I mean, you got to hit the ball so good to get any of the side spin on the balls. It's a completely different game.
Yeah, that's right, and that's what I'm saying because, like, for instance, a tip. Diameter when we play English eight ball would be sort of 8 millimeter to 8.5. Now, obviously, if you look at an American tip, 12 to 13, if you like, depending on what you prefer. And obviously, nine ball pool is all about spinning the cue ball and playing into big areas. As where English eight ball in general, really, you pick your pattern and away you go. You play a lot of stop shots and, you know, a lot of natural shots and things like that. You don't really spin the ball, and that's why you just can't really play both games at a high level. But the thing is, if you're going to play American pool, you've seen it yourself. Look at all the guys traveling around, the relentless Shane, Fedogost, Jason Shaw, you know, Chris Mellin, Darren Appleton. They're just constantly away from home. And I think if you've got two young kids, you've got to be earning some good money to be doing that. That's my view.
Yeah, and on top of that, not only do you have to be traveling and away from home a lot, and I think this is one of the other things I wanted to address with what you were saying is, if you're only doing it for 4 to 5 events a year when you quit pool, it's really hard to stay in stroke for, you know, if you have 3 months in between your games, you have to be playing that entire time if you're going to be competing with the, like you said, the Chris Mellings, the Jason Shaws, the Darren Appletons at the time, the Shane Van Bonings. You got to be always on your top gear, and it's really hard to be on your top gear because you got to be playing, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours a day, and there's no money that you're bringing in between these big events. It's really hard to maintain that top level of pro caliber necessary to be able to continue shooting if you're Carl that was trying to grind out the living.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. And I remember one year I kind of worked it out. I remember, I think it was like, I can't remember if it was like Shane or Darren Appleton. It was somebody who was like at the top of, let's say, the AZ billiard rankings or whatever. And they'd played something like 40 to 45 events. I'd played like early 20s. And I just thought, I just knew it was making me, you know, as I've said, I don't want to keep harping on about it, but it just didn't make me happy. And I just thought, if I was earning like, you know, $1 million a year, then you know, you'd suck it up and you'd get on with it. I understand that. But when you're just making, you know, a normal living, it just doesn't stack up to me. But it's the funny thing is, I always used to say to like some of the matchroom people, can I not just play in the matchroom events and nothing else? And obviously, you ain't going to get to do that. But I kind of laugh now because in some ways, that's what I've got now because I'm involved with all the matchroom events.
You just get the back end of it instead of...
I just ain't got the pressure of pulling the queue out.
For sure. Actually, we could kind of transition maybe into that now. You are now doing a bunch of work with Matchroom, not only as a commentator, you do some interviews for matches, and now you, as we said earlier, you're the vice captain of the Moscone Cup team now.
Yeah.
As somebody who's competed at the highest level, and you're not by any stretch of the imagination, you know, into the middle part of your career. I mean, you're still a very young man. What is it like being kind of a young man doing all of these things, knowing that if you wanted to, you could compete with any of these guys in 2 to 3 months?
Yeah, it's a funny one, really, because like I said, it was when Matchroom announced the US Open and the World Nine Ball Championships, a lot of my, you know, the guys who I hang around with locally who, you know, go for a beer or a game of golf, oh, you're going to get your cue back out, da, 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 and all this. I'm like, well, nothing's really changed in my eyes as such. It's, you know, it kind of is what it is. But there's no doubt about it. I think I didn't really practice that much anyway. So I feel like if I got a table and practiced for 2 weeks, I'd probably be a better player than what I was anyway because I didn't really play. Do you understand? It's a weird one with me.
And maybe to jump in real quick there, back in London when you did the warm-up for the Moscone Cup, it was you, Darren Appleton, Chris Melling, I'm blanking, was it Mark Gray?
Mark Gray.
I'm blanking on who the fifth person was. But, I mean, you played really good in that. I mean, you guys, by all rights, should have beat the U.S. team. I think you had to give up 4 or 5 straight points to let them win that on the hill. But, I mean, you played pretty good in that event, having not shot basically at all then.
Yeah, and certainly the one in Vegas. I mean, Emily Fraser, obviously Matchroom COO, she threw me under the bus there saying, oh, we want you to play in this, like, you know, rest of the world team. I've literally not hit a single pool ball on an American table since the year before Moscone when I had to play that team event. So I've used like a Go Custom shaft that I'd not really obviously hit with.
I was going to say, you weren't even using your own cues for that too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and then I'm like, and then I'm playing like Shane in the singles and the live stream, and I'm thinking, well, I don't need this. And I'd played a few English 8-ball events during that year. Like I said, 8 mil tip, and you're thinking, well, people are thinking, oh yeah, this is why. People are probably thinking, oh, this is why he stopped playing. He can't really play anymore. But thinking, well, I've not hit a ball for 12 months. I'm trying to do that. Do you know what I mean? But the thing is, at the end of the day, obviously, the one thing I have noticed, though, since I stopped playing is how deep it's sort of got, how many younger guys are playing now. I mean, I remember playing a few years ago and, like, Poland had 1 or 2 good players, as where now they've got, like, 10 strong players.
There's 10 players out of Poland. I can't even pronounce their names. I've never seen them before, and they all could give me the 3 out.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And you only have to look at, like, sort of Joshua Filler, Catchy, Fedor, obviously win the World Nine Ball. These are all young kids. You know, I'm like mid-30s thinking, well, I didn't really practice anyway. So they're practicing like crazy. It's just, you've got to be so like on it and you've got to want it, you know. And a lot of them guys, you know, they put all the effort in, you know, they deserve everything they get. And I'm just glad I'm commentating now.
Yeah, right. So I'm going to jump up on my balance beam. And I'm going to try to walk the line on this question because I know Emily Fraser's like breathing down the back of your neck right now when I ask this question.
Go ahead.
So basically going through all of the players you just named, you're going to be partially responsible for at least 2 of them with the fans' choices. I'm not going to say, you know, pick your 2 players now because we don't even know where the rankings are going to be. Although given the circumstances that we're in right now, I mean, how can you even acquire Moscone Cup points to make it into 1 of those 3? So maybe I should actually start this question there. What happens if everything is shut down until, let's say, I don't know, October, and there's only a few events that can be counted towards the Moscone Cup? How do you have any idea how you guys are going to pick teams or how that's going to work?
Well, the thing is, in kind, obviously the US Open's obviously not going ahead. the World Masters, which wasn't a ranking event anyway. Obviously, I would think a few of the Euro Tour events. It's kind of just sit and wait, really. Nobody really knows what's going on. You know, see how long this virus thing goes on. And I mean, who knows? Maybe the whole year has to get cancelled. It's so difficult to answer. I honestly don't know. I mean, let's just say if we get to sort of October and you can start flying around, well, there's no events to be played, is there? So there's no ranking points. Did they just use the ranking that you've got now? And then we pick wild cards, or is it all wild cards? I don't know, because I think there's still got to be some. You know, the Matchroom are quite fair, do you know what I mean? They know what they're doing. I just think it's literally we've just got to sit, be patient, and see what happens.
I think that seems to be the only course of action that could happen right now. So I kind of branched off of my question to ask that one, but I'll finish out my other one now. You had just picked Poland out, but if you look at the rest of the countries in Europe now, I mean, people from America are so ignorant that we can't even name 12 countries in Europe, and we're starting to be introduced to all of these different tiny little countries we've never heard of that are pumping out 6 or 7 players that are now competing at the top level in U.S. tournaments, and we don't even know who they are or where they come from, and they're giving our best players the 3 out. What is it like to be able to not only have that in your backyard playing it, well, I guess not necessarily playing against, but you guys are going to have to choose between these players. How does a discussion like that even start with Alex, and where you're going to get your coach's choices from?
Well, I think the big thing for that is, even though potentially we know, you know, Europe have got a lot of players, I actually think over the last few years, it's actually got a bit weaker. And what I mean by that is, obviously the strength in depth is there, but I remember where you could genuinely pick 2 teams for Europe to play in the Moscone Cup, represent Europe, and you could be fairly confident of winning. But I feel like that's changed a bit now. I feel like it's gone the other way. Even though we've got loads of players, I don't see what players we've got in depth that can handle that arena.
And that's a totally different question that I was going to ask next. Was, I don't think that you're going to find anybody in the world, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, who's going to question Alexander Kazakis' talent on the table, or Eklund Tekachi. Yeah. And Eklund Tekachi actually had a decent performance, but full disclosure, everybody who listens to the podcast knows this. My favorite player in the entire world to watch play pool outside of the U.S. is Alexander Kazakis. And I have such a huge heart for him, for the game of pool. And I hurt for him so bad watching him play in the Moscone Cup, because it's just a really tough atmosphere, and he has not played even close to his average game in the Moscone Cup the last few years. But at the same time, you can't question the talent that he is. What are your thoughts on that, and how that might affect Team Europe?
Yeah, I just think, obviously, it's been unfortunate for, you know, Alex. Obviously, you know, I've been there, and, I remember the first time I played in the Moscone. It's such a unique feeling. And, you know, it's not just a case of you playing on TV and there's a crowd there. It's your other 4 players. And what people don't realise is, you know, you meet up with the guys, you know, a few days before, a week before, and the pressure starts then, because the captain, you know, I remember 2010 was my first year. Johan was captain of Team Europe, and you go into the pool hall, it was in London, and all the guys are there. And I remember thinking, the team, when I look back at the team, this is what I'm saying. If you look at the teams now, no disrespect to any of the players, because in years to come, they're going to be, obviously, you know, Hall of Famers and all this, and multiple world titles. But because it's so young now, the players are so young, it's like, he's not really got much experience in this, but he's won the World Nine Ball Championship. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As where, you know, when I played, there was Darren Appleton, who just broke onto the scene, but he'd won a world title. He was US Open champion, blah, 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 blah. And there was Mika Immonen in the team, Nick Vandenberg, Ralph Suke. And I remember thinking, these guys have been playing this game so long, do you know what I mean? They're like legends of European nine-ball pool. They've won countless tournaments, Euro tours and all this. As well, now it's like, you know, Kazakis gets thrown in the mix. Fedor, let's say if he makes the team this year, he's never played in it. Kachi. And you need to get off to that start where you get that little win. Kazakis has been a bit unfortunate. He's played Shane in some, you know, I think he's played Shane in 3 of his singles or something like that. I'm not saying there's weaker guys, but you don't really want to be playing Shane, do you? You'd rather play Tyler Steyer. And I don't mean that disrespectful, but you just want to try and get that win, don't you? You want the other guy to kind of feel like you're feeling, but Shane's played in it about 15 times, so you know he knows what it's about. So it's a funny one, but the thing is with Kazakis is obviously he's a great player. He just needs that big win. And he'll be fine, but, you know, he keeps trying and he practices hard. He goes to all the events. And, you know, if you keep doing that, your time will come for sure.
Yeah, and I it just seems like his pool career is almost like a Greek tragedy at this point. With the Whirlpool Masters last year, the bank that David Al-Kaidi hit against him, and then, you know, his runs at the Moscone Cup the last 2 years, it's like I root for him so hard, but it just seems like there's so much tragedy in his game.
Yeah, and the other one as well that just sprung to mind. He played when Joshua Filler won the World Nine Ball Championships. He played him in the semi-finals, and he was on the hill. I think it was like 10-9 or something, and he had ball in hand. I'm sure he had ball in hand, and he had a real good easy table, and he made a mess of it. And like I say, he's, you know, he beats all the guys. He gets himself in the positions, and at the end of the day, some people kind of win early, like, you know, Joshua has done, and Fedor and other guys, you know, like Neil won the World Nine Ball sort of the latter of his career, if you like. And it can just take time, can't it? But there's no denying his work ethic and, you know, his kind of love for the game. So I do think his time will come, and, you know, he'll definitely get in the team again. Could be this year, or, you know, it could be next year, whenever, who knows. And you just need that win. So even the very first point, you just want to pot a ball. You know, you feel like you've got somebody else's arm on the first shot of the Moscone. It's that out of body experience.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So one of the things I did want to address that we've passed along the way a little ways back now, but I think it's valuable to go back to.
Yeah, we're getting carried away, aren't we? And getting right into it. This is like isolation 2 weeks. This.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, this is some good in-depth stuff right here. So I think kind of back when you were playing in the Moscone Cup, and, well, yeah, probably there, but even more, you know, a little bit earlier than that, the Moscone Cup was kind of looked at as like kind of an old man event, right? I mean, even at the time, Mika Eminen was up there, Ralph Suquet, Earl Strickland, Rodney Morris, Johnny Archer, all these players were, you know, they're not 21 years old, or like Joshua Filler, or 19 years old, like Fedor Gorst. It's like it's kind of an old man event. And since Matchroom has taken it over and really revamped it, it seems to be getting into a younger man's tournament with a lot of fire, with like Billy Thorpe. I mean, that dude could get a nursing home riled up. I mean, he has so much energy when it comes to like getting the crowd going. You know, and Joshua Filler playing the role of the villain, at least on this is from a U.S. perspective. Jason Shaw played that so perfectly last year. Joshua Filler played it this year. It seems to be a young man event. I mean, if it wasn't for Niels, and I guess to a lesser degree Shane, everybody in there would be in their 20s.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying. It's I think back in the day when it sort of first started, and so I think probably 2010, to be fair, because up until 2010, your USA, you know, they more or less used to win it every year, didn't they? Because, you know, we were on a 7 or 8, you know, win streak. So that kind of brought the whole thing closer. But they used to just handpick the players, didn't they? I mean, 2010, I know I keep going on about it, but the European team was the number one on the Euro Tour and 4 wildcards. That's what it was back in 2010 as well. Now, obviously, as you can see, Matchroom are bringing out their own ranking system. They've acquired 2 more tournaments. So it's heading in the right direction regarding, used to be more of an exhibition. Now it's more of a tournament. You know what I mean? There's big money at stake. Obviously, there's 2 captains now, if you like, when we used to, you know, some years there was player captains, and it's certainly got a more professional feel about the whole thing. And I think as years sort of tick over, I think these big kind of celebrations and, you know, acting like a bit of a clown, if you like, you know, I remember like Rodney Morris used to give it the big one, and obviously you had Hatch and stuff like that. I think you probably might see the end of that, because it's getting to the stage where, you know, there's serious money on the line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Matchroom just increased it again last year. And, I mean, if the numbers continue, I mean, I will not miss another one of these. I will not miss another Moscone Cup. I don't care if it's going to be held in North Korea. I'll find a way to get there. These things are too amazing to miss. They're complete. I'm watching like replays of them now, and I feel like it's Moscone Cup from 2016 is appointment viewing. It's such an amazing production and amazing.
And the thing is, you know, when you're watching it on TV, obviously it's great and you can sort of sense it a little bit, but until you've actually been there, like, and you feel like, because you don't realize how big the arena is and how many people are there as well on TV. You know, even when you're walking and you see it empty, you think, crikey, this is a big arena. And you know yourself, because you've been there, you know, there's a lot of heckling, isn't there? You know, you could play a shot and, you know, the crowd's knowledgeable. There'll be a lot of pool players in the crowd as well, you know, amateur pool players. So if you play a shot and the cue ball isn't quite where it should have been, you know, the crowd just go up that notch or two and they let you know you've got a bit of a tricky shot next, don't they?
Yeah. Woo! Woo!
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's all that going on. So then, and then all of a sudden it's like, it's everyone singing and dancing and trying to put the other team off, and then you get down on your cue, and all of a sudden it just goes bang, silence.
Yes.
It's like the weirdest feeling ever, right?
Oh, it's well, before you get to the silence, though, you have Nigel saying 6 to 7 times, "Settle down, please. Settle down, please."
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So there's like this big build up before every shot, and that's the thing what people don't realize if you've never been there. There's,
it's such a fantastic atmosphere.
Yeah, everything's just so built up, and it's like your emotions are up and down. And I've seen it where people are commenting online, why is he acting like this, da, 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 and all this. But
it's a production.
Unless you've played in it or certainly been there, it's hard to understand, you know, how much pressure the guys are on.
Yeah, for sure. And this can be a fun rabbit hole to go down, because when you were playing, you've played the Moscone Cup 3 times and you're 3-0. Am I correct?
Four and oh.
4-4-0. So,
do you know, everybody says 3. Everybody always asks me and says 3. I don't know why. Everybody does. Everyone says, "Oh, you played it 3, didn't you?"
You know,
so, yeah. 4.
Well, I wish I had an excuse, but I think it's just stupidity.
I don't know. People just always say 3. I don't know. 2010. Then I played 14, 15. No, hold on. 10, 14, 15.
Well, this makes me feel a little bit better, at least.
No, 13, 14, 15. I played 2010 in London. Then I played 2 in Vegas. One was at Tropicana. Was that the one that Earl was in the team? Remember they had that, like, it was Rodney Morris, Earl Strickland, Johnny Archer, Dennis Hatch.
Yeah, and then it was like Corey, right?
It was like an unbelievable team on paper. You know, it was like all the legends. In fact, I think it was like called Legends and Champions. In fact, I think that year it was supposed to be called Legends, and they changed it last minute to Champions because I'd just won like the World 8 Ball Championship just to get me in it, I think. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, so I can, after my ignorance has been shown, I can head back to my question, which was, during your time in, well, really from 2010 to, I guess, the U.S. didn't win again until 2019. So from 2010 to 2018, the U.S. had basically made a sport out of getting their ass kicked every single year in the Moscone Cup. And so the first year that I went was actually 2019. The first time I had ever been was in London, 2019. And then I was in Vegas this year. So actually, the U.S. should probably start paying me to show up, because we don't lose when I show up. But that's beside the point. So actually, Carl, if you want to pay me some money to not show up next year, you'll probably win, and you'll get promoted right away to captaincy of the.
I've got a spare $5. Does that work?
Oh, I'd have did it for 3. But in the 8 years or the 9 years, I guess, that the U.S. was making a sport out of getting their butts kicked, the Europe fans, and I. This is going to eventually lead to my question as to why do you think this is, and I think it's probably like a soccer arena thing, but there are a bunch of chants, and you know, you have chants, you have songs, you have cheers, and the U.S., they have, you know, they're exactly one cheer, and it's to say USA as loud as you possibly can, and Europe is over there singing songs. Like, I still, to this day, I'll wake up in cold sweat sometimes singing na 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 na, you know, the Jason Shaw song. Like, I still wake up sometimes.
No, that's Nick Vandenberg's song back in the day. It used to go na 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 na, Nicky Vandenberg. But to be fair, obviously, He's another one that's retired. And obviously Jason's now got that song, and it does suit his name as well. So it is now his song, to be fair.
And Jason Shaw plays the role of Moscone Cup villain so well. I guess he was so good this year. I mean, he was an amazing, amazing player this year. But back to the question first.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why do you think that the U.S. is so basically I don't even know what the right word is. We just got nothing. Is it because we just got our butts kicked so much?
I've got a question for you. When you go to like American football or baseball or basketball, do they have chants for the players?
So depending on the teams, some teams do and some teams don't. Most don't.
Okay.
Definitely to the point of the creativity that the European fans have.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm saying. So obviously over here, it comes from kind of the football. So a lot of the football teams, they make up songs for the players. So much so, let's just say this was a football match, our European fans would make up songs about your USA players, but they wouldn't be nice nice songs. Let's say that. Well, in fact, some of them used to say... there was one, it was like, "Ease, hatch, the snatch, diddle, 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 dumb," or something like that. And then they had one for Mike Deschain and stuff. They did have them, actually, now I think about it, a few of them. But I think it's come from the football. And the other thing is the darts. Obviously, darts is not really big in America, is it?
No, not definitely not like it is in the UK.
Yeah, and obviously it's on Sky Sports all the time. Obviously, Barry announced that as well. And there's a lot of I think the English Brits. I think were just hooligans. To be fair, that's the best way to just describe it. I think it's more like just a laugh and a giggle, because over here you go to these darts events and you go to football, or even if you don't go to a football match, you go to the pub. And you meet a gang of your mates, and obviously the beer starts flowing, and then you start chanting, and it's like just a laugh, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I had gone to Oktoberfest last year in Munich, and
pretty crazy there.
Oh my goodness, have you ever been?
I haven't been, actually, no, but I can imagine that is a messy place to go.
Oh, it's wild! It's absolutely wild. It's definitely a bucket lister. It's a great time, but it's the same way in Germany. Everybody's cheering and everybody's drinking and everybody's having a great time. And I think a lot of the U.S. fans, when you hear these cheers, they get really offended by it. And I think that's just a difference in culture, where the people from the U.K. they're doing it to have fun. I mean, it's not, it's to add to the environment, not to poke fun and pick on, you know, any of the US players, although that's a byproduct of it. It's all in good fun. And I think, sometimes the players take it a little bit hard, and then some of the fans take it a little bit hard, but I don't think, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think it's a personal thing. I think it's an atmosphere. That's just a difference of culture.
Yeah. 100%. It's not personal. I mean,
maybe the Mike Deschain one was.
Even when I played in Vegas, I remember there was probably 10 of my friends from here who'd flown over, you know, from the town I live in, they'd flown over, and these guys are proper drinkers. I'm talking about they'll be drinking on the plane. As soon as they get to the hotel, they'll throw the bag in the room. They'll they're just drinking constantly, right? And I remember... I was playing, I can't remember if it was singles match or doubles, and they were cheering for the guy I was playing.
And you're probably turning around in between shots, flipping them off, and they're like, hey.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So when I missed, they were cheering. And then, like, when he won, you know, if I played Skyler or something, when he won the rack, they were cheering for him. But it's just like Brit humor, really.
And every time you'd miss a ball, they'd scream, "Nice shot, Niels," something like that.
Yeah, but what I did is I remember I got one of them back, right? He was going to the bar and he come back, you know, like with a big, do you call it a tray over there?
Yeah.
A tray. He's carrying a tray with all the beer on it. There's about 10 pints of beer on this tray, right? And he's walking around the arena, and I wasn't playing, but I was the players. Did you notice like the players were sat inside the arena this year, wasn't it? Last year, sorry.
Yeah, it was. And I'm I mean, Matchroom, Emily can reach out and yell at me later on if I'm wrong on this, but I think it's because
she's
they wanted
a pussycat, don't worry.
I think it's because they wanted to maximize the crowd space. If I'm not mistaken, they sold out the arena. They probably wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah. But obviously, yeah, exactly. So we used to sit in the corner at the front. So anyway, I was sat in the front row and my friend had been to the bar. He was walking back, you know, like at the side of the table in between the seats and the arena with his pint. And as he's walked past me, I've stood up and I've like just dropped his kegs down. So now he's just got this tray with all this beer on. Like, obviously, can't let go. And his trousers are down to his feet. And everyone in the crowd is just cheering and laughing. And he just carried on walking to his chair like that.
And he's probably, like, penguining up these seats, trying not to trip. Yeah. That's a good one.
It's one of your favorite memories, actually.
that was going to be one of my questions later on. What was your favorite memory from your playing days back in the event? But this might be the best joking one, right?
Yeah, that was the best joking one.
Do you have one from actually playing?
I think playing. Good question. Probably when I played Earl in the singles, just because. I mean, obviously, Earl was, you know, we all know he's probably not as good as he was when he was younger, but he could still, he can still play great. I mean, of course, but obviously he's not the player he was when he was younger. But in 2013 it was. In 2013, he was in the team, and obviously there's five singles matches before the final day of singles matches. I remember thinking, it'd be good to play Earl, but the chances of playing Earl are slim, right? Because obviously you don't know when they're going to pick him and they don't know when our players are getting picked. And I ended up playing Earl and I won 6-4. And but I just remember thinking, because I never really seen myself as a nine-ball pool player. Like I said before, I just fell into it. And I never really, you know... I never really practiced. I didn't have the hunger for it. And I just remember thinking, oh, it'd be good to play Earl because obviously I know he's a legend of that game, right? And I just thought, yeah, at least I've played him, right?
And how'd the match go?
I won 6-4, but Earl was being Earl talking all the way through the match. And I remember it's on YouTube, the final rack at 5-4. I remember knocking a really good clearance in, actually, because the balls were a bit weird, and yeah, I knocked him in. That was quite good. But that year we won 11-2 with a day to spare, so we had two partying days.
Well, I should say the only reason that you beat Earl was because the person in the sixth row, seven rows in, blinked at him while he was shooting. So that's the only actual reason you won that match was because that spectator.
You're probably right. He's a funny guy, right? He's crazy.
He's remarkable. I mean, he's a phenomenal talent in his day. I mean, you could make an argument and that he's the greatest nine ball player to ever touch a pool table. And I think you would lose that argument, but you know, there's certainly an argument to be made there. It's remarkable how he can look out at a crowd and you could have like seven people doing jumping jacks and you could have one person like shadow boxing and he'll find the person in the middle who's quietly sipping his beer and like single out that person. And that's the person who's doing things.
Yeah. I don't know why he does this. I don't really get it. I think certainly as he's got a bit older, I don't think it's helped his game because I still think he played great anyway. Maybe not so much right now, but certainly a few years back, certainly in that period when he was still getting in the Moscone Cup, when I watched him, I used to think, crikey, yeah, you can, you know, for sure. I mean, I had a club where I live and he come over and he did an exhibition in my club and he played unbelievable.
Yeah, he's definitely a talent. That you can never take that away from him.
No.
We can move on from that. And another question about the Moscone Cup. Basically, the U.S. team is pretty much set, right? Shane Van Boning, Skylar Woodward, and now I think Billy Thorpe, and we'll assume Justin Bergman because he might be the best player in the U.S. Certainly you can make the argument. And I think Billy Thorpe has really, really stepped up his game in the last 2 years. you kind of have four different players set in place almost every single year. And then the last one, you know, I'm very keen to Tyler Steyer, of course, because he's a friend. And but you could also, I mean, if Oscar Dominguez picks up his cue at any given time, he could be a top player. Chris Robinson's coming up through the ranks. Max Eberle, of course. Corey Dool is still there. But you're picking one player every single year. Do you think that that is an easy thing to do, or an easier thing to do than the situation that you guys would have, basically having 60 to 70 different players that you could realistically pick for an event every year?
I see what you mean, but not really, just because I think, as you said, you don't really need to be captain of America to kind of figure out what the team's going to be doing to you, because unless, you know, somebody comes along and, you know, has like an unbelievable season and, you know, wins sort of a big event and stuff like that. But not a lot of the American players travel anyway to the sort of worldwide events as it is. But so, like you said, the team's going to be pretty much the same, maybe one player out. But I still feel like that's the same with Europe anyway. Just because, like what I said before, I mean, me and Alex, we don't want to, like, you know, pick somebody who obviously didn't qualify, but let's say kind of won the World Pool Masters off the back of it. You know, we want somebody who, you know, who's played in the Moscone Cup, who's won the Moscone Cup, and played good in the Moscone Cup, because you can win the Moscone and, you know, you might lose your singles match, only play one singles match, even in your doubles match, doesn't look, you know, you've won your point, but you've not played unbelievable. So we want somebody who's like actually gone out there and won big singles points, won, you know, come with the game. And that's what we need, because, you know, obviously we've lost the last two, and, you know, we want to win at the end of the day. So there's going to be no like sort of favors for, you know, past people who've done well this season but didn't qualify on the rankings. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, for sure. The heart of that question is, the U.S. is, all in purposes, the lineup is set for the foreseeable future. But you have players coming up through the European ranks that, you know, have never had an opportunity at the Moscone Cup that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, that could fit exactly into maybe even the number one or number two spot on the U.S. team as far as talent. You have players like Max Leshner, and you have Conrad. You have, of course, like David Al-Kaidi. You have players like Albin Ocean, Fedor Gorsh, who's never made a Moscone Cup, Eklanti Kachi, Joshua Filler. And plus, you still have players that, you know, that are a little bit older that are still playing at an extremely high level, like Ralph Souquet, who just took, was it fifth, sixth in the Predator World, or the Diamond Las Vegas Open. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
It's almost, there's I could probably name 15 players throughout Europe, and that's just like the super well known players that you could place on the U.S. team, and, you know, remove some of the players that are potentially locked in place. What does given all of that, and I don't want you taking a shot, I'm not trying to put you on the spot as far as like calling out previous teams, but why is it that the U.S. has won maybe the last 2 years, even though the Europe has almost an embarrassment of riches when it comes to talent?
I, in my opinion, I just think it's down to the sheer fact of, I'm not going to say like players don't deserve to be in the team or they can't handle it. I just think it's down to the fact of, you know, certainly not last year, the year before, I thought Kazakis and Kachi wasn't quite up to scratch. Jason Shaw played great, but at the peak pivotal moments, he kind of made, I think he played Skyler, didn't he? And it was a big match, and he missed a one ball in the corner. But them little things, they're just so key. And I can only go off like when Europe was certainly on their winning streak. I just remember thinking, well, Darren always used to play Shane the last match. Darren had the pickings of Shane on that last match. Shane probably felt like the Team USA team was a bit weaker. Now they're a bit stronger. I think over time, USA team's got just a bit stronger and Team Europe's got just a tad weaker. That's what I think's happened.
It's an interesting thought because it seems like with all the events that are going on around the world, the big events, the matchroom events that you played for, it just seems like the European guys are always at the top of that, and they kind of rotate in and out. Yeah. But
this is the thing. It's like I remember having it was one of the second or third matchroom events I was doing the commentary on, and JP, the guy, JP who does all the pictures for matchroom. We were sat having breakfast, and he says, you're a funny guy, are you? Because you're one of them guys who you're not seen. And I'm not just using me for this example, because there's other European players, and it'd be like Ralph. Ralph's kind of gone off the radar a little bit. He nearly qualified last year. I think at the last Euro tour, if he'd have won a round or two, he'd have been in the team. So he was knocking on the door. But obviously, he's not won that big World Championships or the US Open and all this. So you don't really see him because there's not big, big tournaments where you can keep seeing these players. But obviously, he's got a ton of Moscone Cup experience. So I just think certain players, they've got the experience. You can stick them in the heat and things like that. And I just know when I was playing, I always felt like I was better playing in them in that sort of situation as opposed to a Euro tour. I felt like if I went to a Euro tour and I travelled there on the Tuesday or Wednesday, my first match was on the Thursday, nobody's there watching. You've got 200, monsters in that environment, if you like, playing. You get drawn on table 33. You're playing a lad. You could beat me in that situation because if you've played in the Moscone Cup or, me and Darren, I remember we won the World Cup of Pool. It was $60,000 to the winner, matchroom sport event, live on Sky Sports. As a pool player, there's nothing really bigger, is there? So once you've had that type of experience and then you're going playing on these Euro tours and things like that, it's very hard to get up for it because, yourself, you've been to the Moscone Cup, you know what it's about. And so using what you're going off there with European players, where we've got a ton of European players who are awesome players and we know they're awesome, are they awesome in the Moscone Cup? Because I think I like to look at, let's say, the World Pool Masters, the World Cup of Pool. So if you look at Albin, with Mario He, they've won the World Cup of Pool twice. David Alcaid, he's won the World Pool Masters twice. This is what me and Alex Layla will be looking at, because even though it's not a Moscone, it's a matchroom event. So they're used to playing on a one table setup, whether there's 50 people watching or 500, at least they've experienced the cameras. Max Lechner might turn out to be the greatest nine ball pool player you've ever seen. But at the minute, it would be hard to give him the wild card, wouldn't it? Do you see what I mean? He might get a wild card. I don't mean that. I'm just trying to answer your question the best way I can.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know. It's hard to know. I mean, you get him under the... It seems like those table... Even the surface of the table is... I've heard this from the players. It's a lot hotter because of all the lights that are on it. The tables play different than any tables.
It's a completely different game. But what I mean is, I was only using Max as an example. I mean, I don't even really know the kid. He's just sort of come from nowhere, obviously, because I don't play anymore. I don't, I'm not at the tournaments. But what I'm saying is, obviously, he lost in the final to Jason Shaw. And I thought, is it one of them like one hit wonder type things? But he's like followed it up. He's beating players consistently. He's doing well. He's up there in the rankings. So he's not really a one hit wonder, is he? But obviously the World Pool Masters, we should be there. He was in the World Pool Masters. He could have snapped that event off. And then obviously me and Alex, you can start going, oh yeah, this kid, he's made for this. Some guys are just built for the TV arena and other guys are not. Mike Deschain was a great player, but he had a nightmare in the Moscone.
Yes, for sure.
What I mean? It's just some people it just gets, and some people, and that's what I was getting back to JP. He'd say, the World Pool Masters, I remember David Alcaid, the first year he won it, the second year he lost in the first round, and then obviously last year he won. He lost in the first round to me. I've not picked my cue up for 6 months. In fact, that's where it was. JP said, your character, you've rocked up here. You've got beat to Niels. Niels beat Shane in the final. I beat Alcaid in the first round. I beat Ralph in the next round. I was 7-2 down and a 1-8-7. But what I'm saying is, some people just prefer that arena. Someone like Darren Appleton is going to prefer a proper arena. Shane Van Boning. These guys, because even Skyler, in his early Moscone Cup career, he had a little bit of a nightmare. I'm not saying he played horrendous, but he's certainly a lot better player now in the Moscone Cup, isn't it, than what he was.
Oh, yeah, he's a monster the last 2 years.
Yeah, the last 2 years, he's like really come with it. And I think that's helped Shane because, you know, Shane was always the go-to guy, but he's not going to win the cup on his own, is he? But now I think there's not so much pressure on him because now he's thinking, oh, well, Bergman's on next or Billy and Skyler are up, or, you know, things like that. And all that helps you.
Yep, I agree for sure. You had kind of mentioned that you're not going to have access to all of these, definitely the World Cup or the Whirlpool Masters. I don't know. Maybe that's postponed. I'm not actually sure. Maybe you would know. Is it postponed or is that canceled?
They postponed it at the minute. Obviously, the US Open's postponed.
Yeah.
But it's literally, you know, how long's a piece of string? What's going to go on with this virus? You know, China seems to be opening back up. You know, in 3 months, is it all going to be gone? And then obviously, Matchroom, there's not a lot of space in a year, is there? So I honestly don't know what's going to happen. Let's just hope the match goes on.
Yeah, right. So
forget all the other events. Let's just hope the match goes on.
Yeah, let's forget all the other events that aren't Matchroom. Let's just, you know, who cares about the arrest events? Let's make sure we get as many Matchroom events as possible.
Well,
the best.
Listen, that's my thoughts entirely, to be fair.
Oh, I echo it. Without throwing the previous coach under the bus, this is my opinion. You kind of said something maybe earlier at the Moscone Cup, but I'm not going to speak for you. He was completely outcoached. Johan completely outcoached him last year. I'm not going to say that that was the reason that Team Europe lost, but it theoretically could have been. I mean, what was the final score? 11-9, if I'm not mistaken. No, 11-8 was the final score last year. And, you know, I think that coaching probably cost at least one game and maybe even a 2-game swing. Just a 1-game swing, that makes it 10-9. And now you're looking at, a potential, hill-hill tournament. But the idea is, with what Marcus Chamat had available to him with the Whirlpool Masters and all the slate of events to really be able to make his choice on who his players were, you guys are not going to be afforded that. You and Alex are basically going to be kind of shooting in the dark as far as, or at least potentially, on who's going to be on the team and why. And do you think that that's a tougher setup for you and Alex to have to overcome, or are you just not worried about it and you'll just be okay in the long run?
Yeah, I'm not concerned at all. Me and Alex, you know, we've had phone calls. The very first phone call we had, kind of like ironed out, his thought process, my thought process. We're on exactly the same page. You know, whether Matchroom have any pool tournaments this year or they have, you know, they can sneak them all in and we have to go off, you know, the ranking system that they've announced, or is it going to be a case of there's no real ranking? So, you know, it'd be very harsh on Fedor to kind of just scrap the rankings, wouldn't it? Do you understand what I mean? So whatever the outcome, it doesn't really matter. We're on the same page. We know kind of the players that we're after. Kind of already hinted on that, where we want somebody who's, you know, certainly won the Moscone Cup before, you know, been in that arena. Because even if you've not played in the Moscone Cup for a while, I think it's vital that you've done well in the Moscone Cup. You know, someone like Darren Appleton's not played in the Moscone for a few years. Let's say if he had to go out in that arena in London, well, he's won it umpteen times. He's won big matches in it. So he's got the experience. Just because he's not played in it in 2 or 3 years, it's kind of irrelevant. Ralph Suker, I've already mentioned him. You know, Albin didn't play last year. I thought the year before he was the best European player.
Oh, hands down. I mean, it's not even close.
That's what I mean. He played unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, the only match that he lost was, it took a perfect set, if I'm not mistaken, out of Sky. I mean, there was a couple of safeties played, especially in the Hill-Hill game. But, I mean, I don't think either one of them missed a single ball. I think it was mostly just runouts, except for the maybe like one or two racks where it was just basically safeties, and then somebody jumped out or something.
Yeah, I think Skyler jumped out at Hill Hill. But what I mean is, it's like you can win points and you can win matches, but you know yourself where, you know, you might win that point, but it's been a bit scrappy. Yeah, you've got your point, well done, happy days. But I thought the way Albion played 2 years ago was unbelievable and in total control of everything. Now, listen, in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing. Marcus has got his, his own mind and whatever else. I think you're right in what you're saying. I think the Americans kind of picked up on the strategy and the fact that they could use, you know, Skyler and Shane played more matches than Jason and Joshua. Not saying that they're the two best players in both teams, but that would be common perception of people around the world. Obviously, USA, let's have it right. USA, they had two captains, didn't they? It was all in their favour. Europe went on this big winning streak. For the future of the Moscone Cup, USA winning in 2018 was the best thing that could have happened.
Oh, yeah.
Even the European guys know this.
Oh, it
the
had players. To happen, yes.
Because, you know, how can you have a tournament where Europe just keep winning? It becomes silly, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think to a lesser degree, I think the fact that US won again on their home surface, I think that's going to bode well for London. I think if the US had a fluke win in 2019 or 2018 and then got ran off the tables again in 2019, I don't think that you're going to get many. When I was there in 2018 for the Moscone Cup, I actually sat with the players and their families, and I think maybe we had 3 to 5% of that crowd. And I think if we'd have lost again this year, I think it's going to be much of the same, maybe 8 to 12%. It's a testament for how well the European fans travel. But I think that the U.S. is going to have a really solid chance of having maybe 25, 30, 40, maybe percent of this crowd in London this year. And I think that's great for the future of the Moscone Cup.
Yeah, I hope so, because as you said, you know, that's never really happened. It's always been Europe drowning out, you know, the full arena. But what I noticed about the last Moscone Cup is how loud the American fans were. I know obviously they might not have the songs and the chants, but I've never noticed it be that loud there off the American fans.
Yeah, it was it was kind of like watching a baby giraffe take its first steps when we're trying to cheer and come up with all these cute little songs that Europe has basically bred into their second nature, and we're like trying to take our first steps, trying to figure out what it's like to win and have fun at the same time. And we weren't very good at it, but we're getting there.
it's not just that. Obviously, when you're winning, you're happy and you're going to cheer, right? If the other guy's losing, that's how you keep the crowd quiet.
Yeah, for sure. And then you have somebody like even if we are losing, we got somebody like Billy Thorpe like jumping up on the railings, getting everybody pumped up. I think Matchroom should be paying him to just show up to events whether he's playing or not, just to be a hype man.
Yeah, he's kind of took that role that Dennis Hatch used to do and Rodney Morris used to do that, didn't he? And I think, you know, even though America have won the last 2 years, it's been fairly close, really. I mean, even on the last day, a lot of people, I remember before, you know, when they've done both team sheets, a lot of people are thinking, I think Europe are going to win this, even though they was losing on the last day.
Yeah, and I think I actually honestly thought with the lineups that came out this last year, I don't think I've ever said this before, maybe I'm getting myself in trouble by selling out America, but I honestly thought that we were going to, with the way that the lineups looked last year, I thought that we were going to lose that, even going to day four with a lead, because the Billy Thorpe upset over Jason Shaw was huge. I mean, that one was, I thought that Jason Shaw, the way he was playing last year, I mean, he's playing phenomenal pool. I thought, you know, he wins that match, and then it was a coin flip between, was it Kazakis or Eklanti Kachi and Tyler, but it probably goes, probably Kachi wins that one, and he did. And then next thing you know, it's tied up and we're looking at the last three where Joshua Filler had missed exactly zero balls going into day four, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So that looked like a win at the time. So now Shane's gonna have to win basically two of his two matches on day three just to have a chance, or four to have a chance.
Yeah, and the thing is, if it did go hill, obviously we all know it's going to be Shane v. Filler, and obviously Filler had, you know, he'd played him in the event already. He's not scared to play him. A lot of people around the world, you know, they're scared of playing Shane. They're a bit of in awe, but you know, Joshua Filler, he definitely isn't.
One thing that he does not lack is confidence, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. He's definitely not lacking self-confidence. No. But he's another one of these young guys who we spoke about earlier where, you know, he literally lives on that table. You know, he is relentless.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess I can't let you get out of here without asking who your five players for the Moscone Cup are this year. I'm totally just kidding.
Well, I'll just be happy if there's a Moscone at the moment.
Yeah, right. That does seem like it's a potentially up in the air. I mean, I hope.
Yeah, you just.
Well, Carl, I've really appreciated chatting with you today, and it was a really fun interview. So thanks for joining me.
No bother. Stay safe, and let's hope you know, things get back to normal soon, and we can start watching some pool and see how the season unfolds, and you know, get ready for London.
Yeah, I was expecting to be sitting in my office just watching the World Pool Masters for like this stretch of time until it was done, and now I can't, and it's kind of sad, but
yeah. Yeah. Well, now you're watching Pornhub.
That's where all that bandwidth went. Carl, thank you again for joining me. And
no worries, bro.
I will be looking forward to getting to chat with you in London this year.
Yeah, I'll speak to you soon. Okay, stay safe.
Yep. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Cue Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com, and Knight is KNIGHT.